Hello, and welcome to today's Sterling Commerce webcast, B2B Cloud Services, Any File, Any Data, Anywhere. All listeners are currently in listen-only mode and will remain so throughout the webcast. At any time, you may submit your questions via the chat window on your screen. I'm Stephanie Rulo, and I'm pleased to host today's session and to introduce our speaker, Mr. Jim Hendrickson, Program Director, IBM Sterling B2B Services. Before we get underway, I want to emphasize we'll be addressing your questions at the end of the presentation portion of this webcast. You may pose your questions to our presenter via the chat window on your screens at any time, and we'll address them before we adjourn. If time runs out before we can get to all of them, we'll respond to the remaining questions via email. Our speaker today is Jim Hendrickson. Jim is the IBM Software Group Product Line Director for B2B Services. He came to IBM from Sterling Commerce, where he was responsible for corporate strategy and mergers and acquisitions. During his tenure at Sterling Commerce, he also held positions running product management and one of Sterling Commerce's business units. Throughout his 20-year career, he has developed his technical and business acumen across the aerospace, healthcare, financial, and manufacturing industries, focused on technology, innovation, and supply chain for some of the largest companies in the world, including General Electric, JPMorgan Chase, Ernst & Young, AT&T, and the Department of Defense. Jim, the floor is yours.
Thanks very much. Appreciate it, Stephanie, and welcome everybody. I see we continue to get folks coming on, but that's great. I appreciate everybody here. As Stephanie mentioned, we're going to be talking in our second session about the B2B Cloud Services vision. This session will be focused more on the any, if you will, the any data, any file, anywhere paradigm that we're looking at within a cloud environment. If you were on our first call that we had a couple of months ago, I think it was now, we laid out the whole vision for you, and what we're doing now in our successive calls is actually breaking and driving down into our model. So we'll do a little bit of refresh up front, and then once we get past that, we're going to basically describe what we're talking about by this notion of any to any layer, how it's used, and what kind of an impact it can have for clients as well as for people who are building the capability. Obviously, we need to talk about its purpose and then how that actually comes about. So at the end, we'll have questions. So do be submitting them or thinking about them as we go through. As always, our disclaimer, everything that we're talking about is forward-thinking. We are not making any commitments here or making anything beyond our intent and our vision of what we are looking at in the future as we move forward within our B2B and commerce area. Okay, there we go. So as we talked about in our first session, and these next few slides will be sort of a recap to catch everybody up in case you weren't on. We feel strongly that the cloud, if you will, and there are many forms of a cloud, but that the cloud is a natural evolution of the very strong B2B models that have existed in the market for over 35 years. It's not, and you'll see today, it's not just an extension, if you will, of the traditional VAN or integration as a service environments that we see today. It's much more than that, because it has to be more than that to create the ubiquity that we need in order to provide kind of the B2B environment on a global basis. It is a new consumption model, and it's a new delivery model. It's likely to evolve from B2B services because of the foundation that B2B services has today in the world. Unlike the traditional as-a-service kinds of integration environments, the cloud has the potential to address these four areas that you see on the slide: integration, community, process management, visibility, and analytics. Now, today we're going to talk dominantly about integration, but I don't want folks leaving thinking that that's the cloud. The cloud will, as you'll see as we go through these sessions, the cloud actually addresses all four of these areas. And you may be asking, why these four? And what we found in our research is that of the, and actually companies like AMR have echoed this, of the best supply chains in the world, of companies that are known for supply chain excellence, they traditionally outperform their peers by as much as 15-20, to even as much as 50% when it comes to things like return on assets, inventory turns, return on equity. Inventory, of course, applies to those who are doing more manufacturing or retail-centric, but even banks and telcos, insurance companies have the ability to have that kind of an excellence. When we dove into what makes these companies particularly good at what they do, we found that and categorized their practices, their technology, and their approach to managing their value chain in these four categories. And so again, as we talk about the cloud service, we're going to be talking about all four of these. Today, we're talking specifically about integration to lay the foundation for the next three. B2B Cloud is envisioned to be a unification of these four capabilities. As we said, a service deployment market, the difference we see with when we talk about a B2B cloud is that we believe, again, equally strongly, that that cloud is likely and probably most indicated to be a brokered model. And what do I mean by that? There will be and has been self-provisioning capabilities, but many of the clients that we have that are doing complex B2B are actually looking to the service providers to provide more than just ping and pipe, if you will. For those clients that need only ping and pipe, this can be a pretty self-sustaining, self-provisioning environment. But when you start to talk about doing automated community management and automated onboarding and integrating process management for things like order to cash, it's not a fire and forget kind of environment or a fire and forget kind of offering. It needs to be brokered because it's highly and deep in a detailed way integrated very deeply into the back office, even more than traditional service providers are doing today. And then the brokered capabilities enable B2B services hybrid as well, both between the public and the private clouds, as well as on-premise solutions. And so because of that, again, it's a pretty broad set of capabilities, and it's also with that hybrid model able to move and allow clients to have what they want to do behind the firewall and in the cloud and be able to shift that pretty seamlessly. We talked about this as well in our kickoff, and you'll continue to see this as we go through these series. This is our framework of what we believe that how the B2B cloud services broker will basically evolve. And again, you'll see those four layers that we talked about earlier, but in this one, maybe it's a little different because you'll see that you've got two layers of integration, and we separate those on purpose. One of the reasons we do that is shared infrastructure and connectivity services is going to evolve differently than the integration, the pure B2B EAI ESB integration layer. Infrastructure and connectivity is pretty solid. It has the ability to incorporate new technologies as they come about, and those are all built on a very mass basis for just simple connectivity and use of the cloud. When we get into shared integration, we start to get into much deeper levels of protocols, coordination, and even process integration in some instances that today would be categorized in the B2B or EAI or ESB level of integration. But in a cloud environment, we actually think that having one place to go for all the different kinds of integration. Again, I need integration to my ERP system, but I also need a web service. Being able to have that through one cloud becomes an important aspect for clients when they need to grow, expand, or drive costs. And then the next layer, the process community services visibility. If you look back to the previous slide and think of the categories, these areas sort of come together as specific services within that overarching architecture, that architecture that is the any to any. And then specifically above that, is the use of industry-specific services, whether those be protocols or standards or, in many instances, processes. By having this layer, we can provide the core at a highly efficient level. We can provide integration that's detailed and specific to each individual client's needs without having to build it each time. We have a set of process, community, and visibility services that, in fact, enhance the transaction and collaboration environment that becomes the cloud, and then we have that specific to industries based on industry initiatives or unique protocols or processes that are used throughout. And again, it's this framework that allows us to do that in a way that allows us to do it efficiently so that the cost to clients is competitive, but also allows us to do it on a global basis because the top two layers get very specific depending on the region that you're working in the world. Okay, so we'll turn to those two layers, the infrastructure and the integration layers. That those two form what we call the any-to-any layer, or what we're referring to as the any-to-any layer. Talk about its use and impact. If you step back for a minute and think about the world of value chain management, e-commerce, however you want to characterize it, one of the things that's happened that we know is that the ability and the use of electronic document exchange has virtually tripled over roughly the last 10 years. That was consistent as well in the 90s, but the uptake was a differently characterized kind of uptake. In this case, the electronic document exchange, not only have the volumes tripled, but the number of companies that are interacting and engaging in these kinds of environments has significantly grown as well. That one's a little harder to manage or measure because of the way the clients approach their B2B, but we've seen that both anecdotally and empirically, even as we look at our clients. When you look at the document change, I'm going to focus for a moment on EDI because, interestingly, again, EDI is still the more dominant messaging technology used to exchange information between clients relative to their value chains. And not counting things like manual processes or snail mail, things like that, EDI still makes up 80% of the total volume. That's one of the more interesting things we've seen, is that file integration is still the most dominant approach used by clients to do their B2B. Now, things like web services, near real-time processes, things like that are certainly gaining, but what we're finding across the whole client base is that those processes specifically, and when you think about web services as an example, they're used in very specific sort of laser beam focused kind of applications. And the reason for that is they are significantly more expensive to implement, to design and implement, frankly, and use than the traditional file integration technologies. One of the things on the IBM roadmap in our globalization project that we're currently doing is a web services platform. And interestingly, when we've talked with clients about that who are very interested in using web services in real time or near real time, you know, they're starting to see that a web services platform is step one. And that step two is literally designing the specific or the client specific web service and then bringing that to their associated trading partners. And it's sort of like back in the days when EDI over the internet was coming out and was becoming mainstream. You know, it's an 80-20 rule. Clients will typically go direct with a small portion of their very high-value community, especially related to the value of their revenue, as well as the need for trading partner, if you will, intimacy in that relationship. And they'll continue to use services for the broader set of partners that they have to be able to manage it on a simpler level. That's, in fact, what we call the hybrid model. So again, EDI is still a very strong indicator of the volume, and as that changes, it'll be interesting to see what it changes into. But what has changed within this file integration is the use and approach of the integration itself. So in 2002, 80% of all transactions, and volume back then was about 90, so you'd say about 72% of all e-commerce that was done electronically back in 2002 were done with the documents you see on the left. What's interesting about that is if you look briefly through that, you'll see that most of those documents are actually related to the coordination of the buy and somewhat, to some degree, the ship. As we then look a decade or 8 years or 9 years ahead, we look here 8 years, 2010, the first thing that we see is that, first of all, the number of documents that make up that 60%, not 80%, have grown pretty significantly. The second thing is the 60%, that to get to the 80% document transactions, we'd have to go probably to three times this list. The other thing that you might notice is interesting is that the invoice, which was a lower, lower on the priority list, has come up to a very high level of usage. And part of that, I think, is because clients over the years have made the purchase order and the ship notice and the acknowledgments core to their to what they do. And then they've moved towards the more advanced capabilities of automating the invoice process. You see transportation carrier shipment status message, which is a reflection of the need for better intelligence and visibility in the value chain, things like that. The characteristics of commerce have changed, and you see more of different document types at the top of that. So again, file integration, if you will, continues to be the dominant way that clients are integrating. EDI tends to be the core standard there. And the biggest change over the last 8 to 10 years has been really how clients are using these services to be able to go deeper into their supplier value chain to do more and more automation. And again, we've done studies and actually are working with clients on a number of things where we look at, the average purchase order that's manual being $15 and the average transaction over EDI being pennies. And so the savings become significant when you can do electronic commerce this way. So that's sort of the nature of file. The thing that I left out that is very difficult to measure is that other 20%. And what's particularly interesting to us there is that the amount of, if you will, file transfer service capability, large data movement, bulk file movement, those kinds of things make up the bulk of that 20%. And so one of the interesting changes that we see is, for instance, swapping out or swapping blueprints in certain industries around the design process, or certainly in the banking area or the insurance area, moving very, very large files that used to be point-to-point integration, now using a service to do that has become a much bigger deal than it was 8 to 10 years ago. And even moving virtually any kind of unstructured data has become a stronger play in the market. Our challenge is actually measuring that because it's unstructured, because it's bulk file, because it's blueprint or something like that, image related, it's very difficult. You don't have the same sort of handles as purchase order and invoice, but we are seeing a very significant uptake in the use of these services to significantly drive unstructured data as well. That actually is another reason why going to a cloud environment becomes more important because of the deeper levels of integration. So let's change and talk about this layer in terms of its purpose. And the any layer is intended to create a seamless and very consistent infrastructure as well as integration layer, regardless of the kind of integration or the kind of destination a client would have. As we all know, file integration up until the late 90s was really dominantly large company to large company through EDI. What we're seeing now and over the last decade as well is this notion of different kinds of integration, not with just the enterprise. So some of the capabilities you see on this page today exist, and some get perfected with by transitioning toward a cloud. But open private portals, as an example, is an area where more web-based kinds of capabilities to do transactions over a service are there. This notion of integration with SaaS providers is very, very new, but a lot of clients want to integrate with, you know, in our case at IBM, we integrate with our transportation management SaaS application to allow clients to use the services capabilities we offer to interact with the transportation application they're using on their premise that's in a SaaS environment. You've got EDI and non-EDI capabilities to this notion of pre-connected communities. And that is, if there's any place that's the legacy, if you will, of EDI, that's the area. This bottom right circle, if you will, is sort of the legacy EDI environment. Everything you see outside of it is really not. It's other kinds of integration and use to be able to do collaboration and transaction management. Some of those, again, are still based on an EDI standard, others are not. If you go to legacy on the bottom left, fax and email, things like that, we've been able to integrate those capabilities at a very base level over the last, you know, decade to 12 years. And there's a decent amount of small partner uptake for things like that as there are the internet. And then this notion of IP gateways, whether that, and we'll talk a little bit more about that here in a minute, but again, that's a mixture of leveraging the internet or IP technologies and networking to be able to reach partners as well. So we're going to deeply or just briefly talk about each of these to give you a sense of it, to provide you an example. When we talk about the web portals, I refer to those as open and private. An example of a private web portal could be a web forms kind of portal that's client-specific and client-branded. The purpose of these portals is really to enable non-EDI partners, which is really to say partners that have not done much at all in integration of their value chain with their partners, and allows them to exchange documents electronically using the cloud. For the client that's not EDI savvy or not integration savvy, they can use a single portal that has the core capabilities that are needed to upload data, enter the purchase orders or the invoices or the transportation documents, whatever. Those then get converted to whatever format the associated client at the other end needs. That could be EDI, it could be XML, or it could just be bulking all that data up and sending it to them in a large file, and then it's integrated on their side. The point being that this enables smaller partners across the world to effectively get into the electronic commerce game without having to have a large B2B infrastructure in their enterprise. This becomes very critical for clients that are focusing on new markets in smaller areas. We see a lot of this throughout Asia, parts of Latin America. We're even starting to see a little bit of it show up more in the Middle East. And so again, this is the ability for clients that are very B2B savvy, if you will, to extend to those that aren't. Obviously, the more you can do that, the better cost savings you as a company have, because in effect you're reducing the manual costs that are behind your processing, which can be extremely expensive, particularly for this group of clients. When you talk about legacy conversion, email, fax, et cetera, the example that I can easily use is fax. There are a number of services available out there that are EDI to fax or fax to EDI. And again, it's more of a small partner play. And interestingly, in a study that we did, this is currently, if you were to look at the Chinese market and look at the manufacturing and shipping elements of those markets particularly, you would find that virtually all of those Chinese-based companies are either using a web portal or they're using fax as their method of B2B integration. And part of that is the friendly labor environment that incents companies to hire more people. Part of that is some of the sophistication of the technology. And frankly, some of that is just technology adoption in general based on the other factors, you know, where you would think that particularly strong markets like ERP and B2B would be very large in those areas. In fact, they're not. I think last I looked, the ERP market as a whole in China was like 2% of the world's total market. Yet when you look at the amount of manufacturing going on there, you would think it would be much more. In reality, those markets are not saturated. They're not heavy with technology, and their adoption rates are much slower than a lot of people think. As a result, these kinds of technologies become very critical for clients to drive interaction and to drive integration with partners throughout China, as well as to drive their own costs to a point where it's efficient for them to be working with those partners particularly. Private IP gateways, the most dominant private IP gateway today, or open IP gateway, is actually the AS2. The EDI standard over the internet using AS2 has become a good solid part of the total B2B equation, representing in an infrastructure market, representing about 10% of B2B, and in a service market, growing up to 20 to 25% of the total market. What we find interesting is the integrated capabilities of allowing a client to have direct over IP, as well as leveraging traditional EDI services in a integration service or in an EDI network, if you will, means one-stop shopping for that client in terms of a connection to be able to do all of their e-commerce. What becomes important in a cloud environment is extending those capabilities beyond just an AS2 environment and moving towards more robust IP capabilities like web services, like specific IP-enabled application environments that could be things like procurement, or it could include banks, customs, things like that. More and more we'll see the move towards IP simply because it makes the world a little easier to do some of the commerce. Now the challenge is will be the standards and the protocols. We're a little bit spoiled in our collective world because EDI, while there is no two companies use EDI exactly the same, it is an extremely strong standard protocol. And therefore, once done, it's able to be enabled and then kind of a lights-out environment. When we start talking about AS2, again, you can leverage the EDI standard, so that helps to make that very stable. When you start to look to things like web services and others, like we talked earlier, it's a bit of a change because you start to look at specific business process modeling that's integrated in that protocol, if you will. And so that becomes a little bit more detailed, a little bit more complex, and frankly, a bit more expensive to run and operate. And as a result, that's why I said earlier, clients tend to be looking at this as laser beam applications of their technology. An example there could be inventory updates, things like that are needed. Another one is around loan origination, where a web service can go out and ping the process, provide status, things like that. If you can do that in a cloud around one layer of connectivity, we think that gets pretty valuable. So if you put it all together, the any layer creates an overarching architecture that enables the whole cloud. Here you've got a number of different things that are integrated. Most of these end up being in that any layer. The gray items that you see are really other kinds of capabilities. And so I want to briefly just discuss kind of how this layer and how this cloud really does come together architecturally. One of the things you'll notice in this is if you've looked at other architectures that are around just core WAN services, this looks very different. And it should, because again, the amount of integration, the kinds of protocols, the kinds of orchestration that's going on is very different than something like a well-heeled EDI WAN environment. Now, at the top, you see this notion of global connectivity services. That is still very much that EDI transaction environment. It's a very pervasive technology. It's a very large operating environment, and it has to be seamless to the broader cloud offering. However, you can't take a van and turn it into a cloud. The architectures that are typically used for that are very difficult to adapt. It does, and then you've still got to build services all around it that have nothing to do with just the EDI networking kind of environment. And so our belief is that as we go towards an any-to-any layer that builds the cloud infrastructure, that most of that will be still handled in its traditional way, but it'll be connected more deeply by kind of an enterprise services bus that sits within the infrastructure of the cloud itself. This allows for seamless integration to an EDI van environment while still taking advantage of all of the other services that the cloud can provide. And of course, the van has interconnects to third parties and things like that, and we don't really see taking that up to a cloud level. But basically, EDI networks become a service of the broader cloud itself. You'll see a number of places where we're looking at protocol services. And again, part of this is because of the need to integrate more advanced protocols that are out there today that are more IP related, that are more process oriented. Even RosettaNet becomes a bit of a process oriented protocol, even though it's a legacy protocol. And so connection services using different kinds of protocols, again, IP based typically, and more near real time, are what these connection services you see here. You'll see an event service around a web service. And again, we see web services playing an important role in a cloud as in a services model, because many clients want to extend what they're doing in their enterprise systems to be able to interact with their partners on a deeper level. I said earlier, some of these could be things like inventory checking or origination checking. They could be, you could do entitlements this way, typically can be done in the healthcare market. But building the web service specific to the client's applications and the partner community becomes possible when you have a web service environment that can interact as part of the overall cloud. Integration to mobile services, we speak specifically about mobile today, but mobile is what we have today. I'm not sure where things are going to go. I don't know what the next mobile is, but by building this integration layer within the cloud to mobile services, we also build an environment that can then attach new kinds of similar services. And that's one of the cores of the cloud infrastructure itself, is not just building a specific service, which a lot of times we do today in these hosted service environments, but building an open service that can connect to specific characteristics of processing or of usage or even of location. Transformation service is really kind of the any-to-any data transformation process that goes on in services today, but will go on much deeper in a cloud environment. Being able to convert EDI to anything, being able to convert XML to anything, being able to take flat files, being able to take data directly out of enterprise ERP systems or supply chain systems, and then to translate that into usable information that can be sent to partners or, frankly, can even be held in states. And I think one of the things that comes to mind for me that is available to be done in the cloud is sort of an order-to-cash reconciliation. Being able to take and see the orders from an ERP as they're going to the trading partners, looking at and being able to hold that in state while looking at the fulfillment side, the shipping side, and the receiving side, so that ultimately what can be provided back to the ERP is a literal chain of transactions that allow the ERP users to then reconcile that information much, much quicker than is available today. And that's particularly true on the transportation side, where sometimes the lag between receipt or the invoice of a transportation carrier back to the payment time can be so long that a lot of the legacy information like wait times and route analysis and things like that can be lost. This is also true in terms of looking at things like healthcare entitlement and benefit and coordination of care, where again, as you hold and can hold some of those those things in state, you can actually provide informatics back to a healthcare system to see what kind of entitlements compared to transactions or usage, if you will, of the services are happening. Typically today that has to all be held in a health system, and then data has to be brought in from the insurance companies and others to be able to bring that together. And then finally, again, in financial systems, even the ability to coordinate and potentially do more with electronic invoices tied to the supply chain itself become very real when we can start to provide transformation and hold things in state, the transactions in state, to be able to provide that back to a bank for invoice, for factoring of receivables, things like that. So transformation becomes a very core, very important part of the cloud itself. Now, the thing that clients won't necessarily see of a cloud is this registry and governance. And that's a particularly important part because it's through the registry and governance, roles, rights, usage, identity management, which is actually at a lower level, that the cloud, in fact, can be parsed and the cloud can be provided to clients in a way that makes it that provides the levels of security, the levels of data, data privacy. It enables the multi-tenant usage without losing the clients, and it even allows us to provision specific areas for clients that no other person could get to. So the registry and governance is very critical here to enable that infrastructure to be shared between multiple companies without any potential breach. That's a pretty straightforward and easy thing to do today in the services model, but when you start talking about process services, community services, registry of partners and things like that, which start to become other elements of the applications of the cloud, that becomes that much more critical. So this is my busiest slide. No, not really. But one of the things I wanted to highlight here was this core, this shared infrastructure and connectivity. We really haven't talked about it extensively because most of this will be transparent to the users of the cloud, but it bears some discussion. So for a cloud to be a cloud and to be successful, it not only has to have multi-tenancy and the ability to leverage scalability back to the companies that are using it, regardless of the service. It has to be open and it has to be usable from an infrastructure perspective to enable virtualization and growth of the cloud scale itself in very specific step-by-step kinds of ways. And what I mean by that is in a virtualized architecture, of course, we're using a core infrastructure and then we're virtualizing all the capabilities so that we can load balance between servers, we can add and increase scalability without having to take the whole thing down. We can better mirror data and even leverage virtualization in things like disaster recovery scenarios. The workload balancing, and again, I'm referring to the things on the bottom left here, the workload balancing is a function of virtualization at one level, but also, just very quickly, if you look back to the architecture of the orchestration engine here, the orchestration engine is sort of the brain behind the cloud and the ability to provision and provide services. And so you not only have to workload balance across the servers themselves and the physical infrastructure, you have to balance across all of the different services as they're being consumed. And so using this virtualized architecture, using workload balance capabilities, allow us to actually scale specific services both real time as they're happening. So again, if one service like transformation is being heavily used at one point in time in the month, we can actually spread that load across servers that don't actually typically are used for transformation, but they can in these cases. But also being able to provide that kind of scalability, but that kind of scalability balanced to everything else. And so instead of having to build some mega infrastructure that anticipates the future 10 years out, we actually can build a core infrastructure that's shared that can scale incrementally based on client usage. And that drives our efficiency in a cloud environment, which means that we can be more competitive. You know, you get what you pay for, and some of the services are quite expensive, but it does allow us to provide a very efficient cloud environment for clients that want to do especially more of the advanced services. Integrated delivery services is a mixture of the people, the monitoring, the networking, as well as the implementation and integrated delivery of the services themselves for clients. As many of you know, we have a network service. We also have a managed service. And our managed service is offered to clients who want to, in effect, outsource B2B infrastructure and B2B processing. And we can do it typically very efficiently compared to other delivery models. In a cloud, it goes to a new level. In a cloud, that integrated delivery starts to go to, starts to allow us to, in effect, package a specific set of services, whether they're consumed by the company as part of their broader B2B infrastructure, or whether that's outsourced in a managed service. So for instance, in a cloud environment, in a cloud broker environment, managed services now becomes an offering rather than a capability. And managed services can be configured to provide whatever the company needs of the services that are provided. But similarly, a client that needs connectivity services, or may today have global connectivity services or EDI, can start to take advantage of some of the other services without it being an outsourced environment. And we can do that because of the way we integrate the delivery, the way we architecture, and the way the services are provided. And again, identity management is another factor. We already, you know, we've made some strides already with identity management, but when you take identity management, put it in with the governance and the registry capabilities of the infrastructure, it literally has one identity regardless of the services provided. And so that infrastructure then sits on top of a set of core services that are integration related. So again, we talked about the protocol services for connection, we talked about transformation, we talked about mobile, talked about web services, we talked about all these pieces. But what may not be clear is that center orchestration engine that we have is how all of those services become consumed incrementally by the client. So again, whether that be leveraging the ESB to do transactions traditionally using EDI while also providing web services, all of that gets done through one cloud connection. Again, all of that becomes completely mobile enabled, which is something that's a little bit harder to do between traditional infrastructures like EDI and IP infrastructures today. We do a good job of it, but in the cloud, it becomes all one thing. So the underlying infrastructure then enables the top levels of integration, which is exactly what we needed to do so that U.S. companies can consume the kind of integration you need. So overall, we have within this any-to-any layer as part of a cloud, we have further simplified partner integration and communication. It really does fully become any-to-any, and it's any-to-any managed. It automates transaction processes beyond just EDI today. It can go to other legacy infrastructure capabilities, but we can also start to integrate and automate overarching processes through that data transformation as well as through holding things in state. And seamless access to community and process capabilities, one of the things that companies will get the advantage of through this is a broader set of partners that they can communicate. They can have this in a hybrid model. So if you have an enterprise infrastructure, but you need, for instance, community management services that are available in the cloud, that can all be done between the enterprise and the cloud, and you can get one total view of your community. And then from a roadmap perspective, as an example, and again, I want to reiterate, this is sort of a sample of how a roadmap could look in this sort of a journey. One of the things I want you to see is that the infrastructure isn't just created and then that's, you're done, you have the cloud infrastructure. It's actually evolved just like the applications, processes, and other elements of a cloud. So in a cloud architecture 1.0, you see the things like cloud orchestration and web services and service provisioning. But as it becomes more enabling, now we have global virtualization. We have extended mobile capabilities to all services. You get the vertical capabilities in there that are completely orchestrated with all of the other services. And then at a higher, more mature level, you start to get multi-enterprise ESB services where you can actually leverage the ESB of the cloud infrastructure into the ESB of the company itself to provide even deeper levels of integration. And you get, in effect, a federated capability, not just a multi-tenant, but a federated capability where a brokered cloud can actually help manage other clouds as services and further enabling clients to have better reach, better capability, better community management. And next up, so that's this presentation. The next session that we're going to have, and I have Scott Lewis here with me, who's my partner in crime. When are we looking at that, Scott?
September.
So the next session that we're going to be having will be in September, and if I remember right, we're going to move towards the community. Yep. So in September, what we're going to talk about is this vision and this model relative to community management and the concepts of global registries and automated onboarding and things like that, capabilities that don't exist today. So I hope that this has been informative to you and that you'll check us out again in September when we start going up this layer to the higher value components. And so with that, I'll turn it back over. I think, Stephanie, I turn it back over to you for questions.
That's right, Jim. Thank you. For the Q&A portion of today's webcast, Jim will be answering your questions. Before we turn to answering questions, let me remind those of you who haven't yet submitted your question, you may do so by typing your question in the chat window on your screen and then clicking on the send button. If time runs out before we can get to all of the questions, we'll respond to the remaining questions via email. We have now received some questions, so we'll turn to those first. Our first question asks, you mentioned that non-EDI document trading is becoming more prevalent. Do you foresee non-EDI document transactions surpassing EDI anytime soon?
So that's a very good question. Interestingly, we still see EDI being the dominant transaction type, if you will, for the foreseeable future. I think what we'll start to see, though, is, again, we'll start to see volumes continue to escalate quite a bit, and I actually think we're going to see a point where it starts to escalate at a very rapid basis as things like web services, file transfer services, and new kinds of collaboration come online. It'll be some time. Today, EDI, even in my B2B service, EDI is well into the 2 to 3 million transactions a day compared to all others. But again, I think the real key is the kind of transactions aren't changing, but the style is. So we're doing more IP connect. In fact, for IBM service that we have today that I run, we're seeing an equal amount of EDI transactions running in IP using AS2 and other methods as they are running in the traditional VAN network environment. So I think it's less about what kind of transactions and whether EDI will be eclipsed, as it will be how clients will want to do EDI.
Okay, our next question asks, where is IBM and Sterling establishing such a global B2B cloud network today? And then there was a follow-up from the same person that said, is the network described today as operational?
The network described today is not operational as we provided it here in this vision. Obviously, the reason we're doing this session, these series of sessions, not only to get feedback, but it's because as part of becoming IBM, the legacy Sterling Commerce offerings are going to move more and more towards the cloud. We do have a B2B services roadmap for moving in many of the architectural directions we're talking about. But I would not say that, the analysts may disagree. The analysts may give me the ability to say I'm a cloud today, but I would not say that we are fully a cloud today. I think we're a cloud service, but I don't think we're a brokered cloud service. And I think that part of that is really getting some of the more sophisticated process capabilities and community capabilities in there along with the orchestration and management. I would say, where is IBM doing that today? Certainly, the investments that IBM are making towards this kind of a cloud are being done in B2B services. So they are part of the extension of what you, if you're a client of our network, we're extending that, and we won't make the network a cloud. It'll be an object of the cloud or a service of the cloud, But the cloud is probably, I don't know, I'm guessing 65%-70% complete today. And over the next couple of years, we hope that that will be completed in this vision.
Okay, our next question asks, how does a B2B cloud service differ from just a next generation VAN?
Ah, well, kind of said that a little bit. Let me elaborate that. Again, when we look at the VAN architectures and technologies, they're very, very specific. Typically, the architectures themselves can be very scalable, but they're very, very particular to the standards that are around EDI, the parsing that goes around EDI. In effect, the VANs today, really good VANs today, are global switching networks for EDI transactions. The connectivity portion of that is clearly commoditized. The transactions are very valuable to clients, but it's not hard to do similar, just maybe not on the same scale. When we start talking about a cloud service, and I'm going to pop back very quickly, well, if I can very quickly, to kind of this architecture. When we start to talk about a true cloud services broker, we start to look at that very top piece that's connected via the ESB to be that traditional legacy environment. It's very active, it's very integrated into the service, but it's just the VAN. And what you start to see blooming around it are all of these new IP and integration capabilities to drive deeper integration between companies, to enable companies to go well beyond just EDI, and ultimately we think to provide a deeper level of collaboration just around the supply chain processes or the value chain processes themselves. That's something that the networks that we have today don't do.
Okay. One question that I did want to address that's been coming in is people are asking if they can have access to this presentation, and I wanted to let everyone know that they will be receiving an email with an archived version of this webcast with a replay of Jim giving this presentation to all of you, so you will be able to gain access to that. And then, Jim, I have another question for you, which is, how does this kind of architecture scale How does this kind of architecture scale globally? It seems like it would be very expensive for a company like ours to use.
That's a good point. That's the game changer, in my opinion. The cloud capabilities, the orchestration, the registry governance, the ability to scale virtually all these services in this environment will actually allow us to do some things that we can't do in a traditional B2B service. For one, we can replicate this infrastructure in areas where, for instance, in the EU, there are regional processing requirements that the EU lays down for certain kind of information. I can pick this capability up, and I can put in a scaled version in the EU that's completely connected back to my core platforms. And I can do that anywhere needed in the world that where regional processing becomes critical. By the same token, if I don't have a regional infrastructure, we will have, and our vision is to have regional support and delivery, obviously, because that's part of being global. But what's particularly interesting is if I have clients in Asia that need to use this service, the architectures and the capabilities that we have are sufficient that we can do that. As soon as the cloud's available, we could do that with our in-country or in-region support and delivery people. So what's interesting is scaling-wise, it's a little different, again, than the traditional VANs. You don't have to build an architecture everywhere and plop it in everywhere in order to provide this level of service. And in fact, what we're finding more and more as we talk to clients is it's not even indicated to do that. Instead, we're looking at clients that want the use of all these capabilities, and some of these capabilities, like the transformation and things we provide today, you get those via IP, and then they're used to whatever trading partners need to be connected. But again, in areas where there's a regulatory need due to privacy or kinds of processing or things where there needs to be an infrastructure, that infrastructure will be there. But in all instances, what we're really focused on is ensuring we have the right regional and country support people, native language in the products, as well as delivery capabilities to deliver these services globally, regardless of where the infrastructure is.
Okay, we have time for one final question, and that question asks, are there any new transaction standards evolving for the cloud? For example, EDI 8.3C3 R4 invoicing. Are there anything similar defined for the cloud?
What we're seeing today, and we're watching this pretty carefully, is there's really not cloud-specific messaging protocols being created per se. And hopefully from the presentation, you see that a lot of what makes up the cloud to the integration level is work that needs to be done, but not protocol-specific. I think the one area, though, that I would say is related to what you've asked. So just to get an answer to the direct question, no, we are not seeing cloud-specific protocols created. And again, the reason for that is these are all services that are bound together in that cloud infrastructure. But again, beyond EDI and RosettaNet as examples, what we are seeing is because of this concept and this vision of clouds, because of the service environments that are there today, we are starting to see standard processes that can include protocols, but specifically include certain kinds of standard messaging, coordination, and collaborative standards. And sort of an out there, kind of on the edge one right now, as an example, is something called PEPAL in Europe. And PEPAL is the Pan-European Payments Online, I believe is what it stands for. And PEPAL is basically a way for that European countries will interact with government entities for procurement. And that in itself is, I've looked at the standard pretty deeply, and it looks a whole lot like a RosettaNet kind of standard, but it's not based on RosettaNet. But it is based on IP and web service kind of based processing. So we're seeing that level of new capabilities coming. E-invoicing is another one that's not on the edge. It's getting more and more mature. E-invoicing standards in Europe are specifically message-based and protocol-based. They're digital signature-based and archive-based. And all of those they have standards for. And then, for instance, in Brazil, they're starting to engage in the same notion of e-invoicing, but they're doing it because they want to curtail black marketing. So their standards then become different. You can't plop an e-invoicing capability in Europe and apply it to Brazil, for instance. So rather than their particular messaging standards, what we're starting to see is the process standards and the protocol standards related to sharing processes are starting to come on and become more and more complex. And that's why, again, as we roll towards a cloud service, being able to handle those as services rather than individual point integration becomes very critical for us.
Thank you for your questions. We have reached our scheduled adjournment time. For those of you whose questions we have not yet answered, we'll be emailing the answers to you soon. I'd also like to thank today's speaker, Mr. Jim Hendrickson, Program Director, IBM Sterling B2B Services. I'd like to thank each of you for joining us for this session. We hope it was helpful, and I look forward to working with you again in the very near future. I'm Stephanie. Thank you, and have a good day.
Thank you for participating in today's conference. You may disconnect at this time.